This episode of the Cincy Shirts Podcast is brought to you by Cincy in a Box, the home of Cincinnati-themed gift boxes with free shipping within the U.S. and to our overseas military personnel, perfect for corporate events, out-of-town guests, or anyone near and far who loves Cincinnati. Customizable with your choice of local favorites, including favorite Cincinnati foods, souvenirs, and treats. Get $5 off with the code CINCYSHIRTS. Simply head to CincyInABox.com to place your order today. Again, that's CincyInABox.com. And again, save $5 with the code CINCYSHIRTS. Now, on with the show.
This is WCPO-FM 1051 on your FM dial, Cincinnati, Ohio.
WKRC, Cincinnati.
This is the Nation Station.
Hi again, everyone, and welcome to the Cincy Shirts Podcast. It's episode 87. Today on our show, it's all done with lasers as we talk to Jason Kleinens and Matt Martin from Exact Metrology.
This guy happened to hear that an archaeologist was coming, and he brought a picture of this weird head, like head carving, and all of a sudden, Daniel gets super excited. It's like, but he's trying not to show it. You know, he's like, oh, wow. Can we see that tomorrow? Can we scan that?
Now, measuring stuff with lasers may not at first seem that deep, but we find out all kinds of cool stuff, like how Jason was part of a team that was sent into the Peruvian jungle to measure an ancient, mysterious monolith, how laser measuring tools are used in crime scene investigations, we dive into the world of 3D printing and lasers, and we find out what the most unusual thing they've ever heard of being measured with lasers. You may be surprised. If you're liking the podcast, you can support it via PayPal or Venmo. Simply use podcast at cincyshirts.com and just kick in whatever you feel is fair. And of course, also support this week's sponsor, Cincy in a Box. Don't forget to do that. Also, be sure to listen at the end of the interview for the 20% off coupon given by Jason and Matt. You can use that to save 20% at Cincy Shirts and Old School Shirts. And now, well, let's talk to Jason and Matt about lasers.
She came down from Cincinnati. Just maybe think of me once in a while. I'm at
CincyShirts.com in Cincinnati.
Well, today we're here with Jason.
Howdy.
From Exact Metrology.
Yep.
Yeah. See, so the point of our podcast is we like to have people on who are in Cincinnati doing their thing, and people might not know that, you know, stuff like this goes on anywhere.
Sure.
Let alone right in their backyards. So, so Exact Metrology. So you're not, it's not meteorology. We're not doing anything with the weather here. It's,
that's right.
What the heck's metrology starting off?
Yeah. So I guess by definition, metrology is the science of measurement. And that's a pretty dorky term to talk about, like, what we do, though.
Yeah.
You know, we are in the business of helping companies make the right parts for the most part. So we use different tools like 3D scanners to inspect their parts or turn that 3D scan data into CAD files, computer files that they can use to make other things or check, you know.
Yeah.
Is this real thing that I've made what it's supposed to be compared to this computer thing? It's a lot of measurements and 3D information.
So if somebody had something, a gear, say, and they had a notion to make a slightly different kind of gear, you could scan the original one, and then they could monkey with that in the computer, and so it would be, to make a couple of improvements to it.
Yep, absolutely.
Interesting.
Yep. And, yeah, it's pretty interesting because one of the things that keeps me hyped about what we do is that we get to work on something different every day. You know, it could be artwork to DoD stuff or a nuclear site to architecture. And that's pretty exciting for an engineer.
Heck yeah. So how long has the company been around?
I want to say we've had our Cincinnati office since 2000.
Wow. So is that pre-3D printing?
Yeah. Yep.
So what before 3D printing was in the mix, was it just just blueprints or
I don't know. I think you'd be surprised. Like, a lot of companies still operate with their blueprints, which is good and bad. But here's a great example of why somebody might do some reverse engineering. They sent their blueprints off to China to get manufactured or something, right? And the manufacturer over there has been monkeying with their tools to make sure that the parts are coming out correctly, and over time, these tools break. Well, nowadays, to make a tool, you pretty much can't use a blueprint or a print. I mean, you can, but it's really difficult and time-consuming. So they might send their tools to us, or like they're bringing their manufacturing back to us. Then we scan their tools, give them a file of what their part actually is, you know, represents their true part, and then they can go in and make changes if they need to going forward, because it's way more accessible in the computer.
Oh, wow. They put it back in the computer on their end, and then they can send it to the manufacturing process?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yep. So, for instance, Tom Sachia, the artist who does all the sculptures for the Reds.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hey,
man, I love Tom. He's awesome. But so maybe he mentioned it, but like he makes these 2-foot molds, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Brings them to us. We scan them, turn them into a bigger computer file, and then he takes that file to get poured, well, rather CNC'd on styrofoam, I believe.
I don't know. So it helps with the scalability.
Exactly.
So he makes a small sculpture, and then you guys scan it, and then can blow it up.
Yep.
That's wild. So you can scan whatever.
Yeah.
So your clients, I mean, are you guys actively out trying to find new clients, or people just hunt you down like, hey, scan this for me? I don't know. Like, I'm...
Sure.
It's...
I'd say it's both. Yeah, we're always looking for new partnerships, as I like to call them, because we like to build relationships with companies and organizations that are trying to succeed at what they do. Yeah, we're building community with a job that we just did down in Peru with some archaeologists, right?
Yeah.
And we're using two of our suppliers to help us with equipment and processing and trying to build a community of helping everyone succeed.
Wow. So you're going down to Peru.
Yeah.
So that's like Indiana Jones type stuff? Like,
yeah.
So you're actually taking they're handheld scanners? It's not something that's like in, takes up like a whole room that... You know, you put on a table and scan and be done with it. Like it's something that's mobile.
Yeah, right. The scanners that I took down there are from Artec 3D, Space Spider, and an EVA, and they're both handheld. We have other scanners, you know, CTs that take up half this room and stuff like that. But
yeah,
trekking through the jungle, I didn't want to be carrying anything over 10 pounds.
Wow.
So what did they scan at the site? What were they used for?
So we scanned a monolith that was, you know, we had a machete out of the jungle for 2 hours. And that, the archaeologists are working on dating it because at first assumption it looks like it's 200 AD to 200 BC. So it's crazy old, which is pre-formative, I believe they call it. And but that time period is the pre-formative, 200 to 200.
Yeah.
And then the Chachapoyas came in. They're pre-Incan, who came in and did carvings over. So they're trying to tie together these timelines from that and some other objects that we scanned down there, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where are those archaeologists from? Or how'd they get a hold of you guys? Or how's it even come about? You just get on a plane and take off and... I mean, I can't imagine what... You're just sitting in your office, and the next day your boss comes out and says, pack your bags, you're going to Peru?
Yeah, sort of.
Or who's crazy enough to go to Peru? They all point at you. Or you went personally, huh?
Like, yeah,
that was...
Yep, yep.
Wow.
So the story that I heard from our client, Daniel Fernandez de Villa, he's a Peruvian archaeologist based in Boston now. And he started a group with a woman named Antonia Hieronymus called Loose Change. And they get local Boston area kids to raise money to supply school supplies to these really remote villages in Peru. And so on top of that, they wanted to combine this philanthropic effort of bringing the school supplies to them with getting this archaeological information, 3D scanning. So Daniel got on Google, looked up 3D scanning, ended up finding us, and reached out to us. And one of our inside sales managers was like, "All right, Dana or Jason, who wants to go?" He's like, "Well, I feel like I was built for this. Yeah, I'll do it." And it became a huge, huge project.
Wow. So you, so what's that like? You get off a plane in Peru? I mean, do you really, obviously you don't know anybody. Are you, like, is just you from the company? Is there anybody else?
Nope.
They're just like, "Hey, go that way." Or do they have a, they don't have Ubers down there. Like, jump on a donkey? Like, what's the next step?
Sure. So, yeah, it's kind of a wild story. There were 13 of us on the actual backpacking part of it, and six guides that went with us. And they're from, you know, northern Andes, real mountain men. I mean, some of the toughest people I've ever met. They were incredible humans. But let me back up. The plan was for me to leave Cincinnati and land in Boston. And then I stayed with this lovely woman and her family overnight. And then her and I left Boston with three other Bostonites. They're all teachers in the Boston area. And they help promote the organization, Loose Change and all that. And some of them had kids that attended these expeditions in the past, bringing school supplies. So we leave Boston, fly to Mexico City, and then land in Lima. We get to Lima, they pick us up in the trucks, and all of our baggage was left in Mexico City. So the entire next day, we're on the phones, in person at the airport, trying to track down all of our equipment. You know,
so it's a disaster right off the bat.
Hey, oh, yeah. Like, nothing goes to plan, right? I'm missing tens of thousands of dollars in equipment. And
all your scanners weren't on you?
No, no.
You checked those?
Yep.
Wow.
Everything was lost. You know, we're flipping out. I didn't call my boss right
away. I was going to say. We're like, I'll just hang out down here a little bit. Yeah.
So, yeah, we lost a day getting everything back, which put us back on schedule, or, you know, took us off schedule. So we had to cram 2 days, well, 3 days drive into 2 days up the north coast of Peru. So we drove 2 days of like 10 to 12 hours north and then east into the Andes. And we landed at Lamabamba. And that was kind of like home base. We spent the day there, kind of rested and did our planning with the guides and getting our rubber boots and all that.
Is this tent living or is it a hotel outside of the
this
jungle?
Place, this place is a really old town, very north in the Andes. You know, everybody, not everybody, most people that go to Peru go south down to Machu Picchu and the Inca Trail and all that stuff, right? It's complete opposite. Not many people go up here at all. Maybe to see the Lake of the Condors, but
this is a recent find, this area?
Not necessarily. It's just the village we were going to is super remote.
Okay.
Nobody goes there. Even people from the Andes don't go there. So we're in Lamabamba. We get ready the next day. Then it's 2 days backpacking. The first day was 9 hours and the second day was 11. 23 horses, 6 guides, 13 people. We had 4 drivers, you know, just to get there and back. We get there and then a jungle pours. Like that night after we did the philanthropic stuff of giving the supplies, which was crazy heartwarming. They were so grateful. Like the kids have to drill a hole through their pencil and wear it as a necklace because they don't know when the next time they're going to get a pencil is. they were just so pumped for us to be there and helping that they put on this display for us where they took a solar panel, hooked it up to a car battery, and then hooked that up to a speaker so they could play music to dance for us, you know, to give us a presentation.
Oh, wow.
You know, this guy was like, thank you so much for being here. No one comes here, and I just don't know what to say. So when you don't know what to say, dance. I'm crying. Everybody's crying.
Oh, well, yeah, they probably don't see many people, huh?
Nope, definitely not.
That's awesome. So you had that good feeling in your heart, and then it starts pouring?
And then it pours. We're staying in this their old school, which had been ruined from an earthquake a couple months earlier. You know, tin roof and this like deafening roar. And so 5 a.m., Daniel gets up, and he's like, guys, we got to go. Okay. You know, so packing up all the horses. We take off so that the guides can pack the horses. And it was about an hour and a half, two-hour hike to the monolith. And at this time, I'm carrying most of the equipment. I got two laptops on my back and a bunch of other stuff. Because I figured I'd get there, do the scanning, and then put the stuff on the horse so we could finish that day's hike. Instead of doing 2 days back, we broke it up into three because the path was getting washed out from all that rain. And, you know, when you're walking on a foot and a half wide path where you got a boulder on your left side and you look to your right and there's thousands of feet straight down.
Whoa. Like, so you're high up in the mountains.
Super high. Like, I think we went from 5,500 to 13,000.
Wow.
And everything in between. So, like, every 2 hours you might get to a plateau or get through a pass or some peak. It was changing climate. You know, might be mid-30s and you could see your breath, and then 2 hours later it might be 95 and 100% humidity.
Do you have altitude sickness? Any problems with that?
Several people got sick. Curiously, candy helps a lot with that. So everybody's got chocolate on them and little candy pieces.
I've heard that. We're going to Denver next week to Red Rocks, and my wife's all panicky that she's going to, because it's a big walk up from the parking lot, and you're already at 5,000 feet, so she's reading all up on what to do in case she gets altitude sickness.
Yeah,
you'll
awesome.
Be fine. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Candy's awesome.
Okay.
Are you going to a show?
Yeah.
Cool. What are you seeing?
Vampire Weekend.
Oh, sweet.
Yep.
You excited?
Yep.
Heck yeah. Have you ever 3D scanned Vampire Weekend? They showed up like, hey, give me a scan.
Well, I reckon you could do that with those holograms they do now, like when they did with Tupac.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're going on the road anymore, man. Just scan the band and
and then give it to Disney animator and animate it. That's awesome. So you get this monolith, like,
yep.
Does it have a name? Can I Google it and find what you scanned or anything to what it looks like?
No.
Like, no one's ever really seen it?
I could show you some pictures. Yeah, I could show you some pictures.
Is it big? Is it like, in the, like, built by aliens, and people are like, what the heck? Yeah. Where did this thing come from?
It's probably like 10 feet wide, about 3 feet.
It looks like a rock.
Yeah, right. Yep. So, we can't really talk about where it is and too much about it yet.
Yeah.
Because.
Oh, wow.
You know, over the past 2,000 years, there's probably a couple dozen people that have seen it.
Yeah.
So the archaeologists are excited about it. We're giving them interactive 3D tools that they can optimize the research with. You know, they can zoom in and out and see the different carvings of it.
Wow. So was there like a story being told on this thing, or?
It's in process.
I mean, is it like a, I don't know, like a burial? I don't know, some ceremonial thing. Like, what is any idea what it was even used for? Or that's not for you to decide. You just show up and measure it.
At this point, because we're writing two scientific papers with the archaeologists,
okay,
and then presenting them in Berkeley in January at the 60th annual Andean Studies meeting. So, you know, I'm kind of learning as I go along. This is definitely not my forte. I don't know anything about archaeology, so
that's awesome. Yeah,
so when you scan it, is it does it reveal things that aren't visible to the naked eye because of the different depth? Okay.
Yep, for sure.
That's what I was wondering why it would be, because I mean you could just walk up and read it otherwise.
So, yeah.
I was wondering where the laser scanning came into it.
Yep, so you're true. Scanning the inside of it, seeing if there's it's a big rock, it's probably solid, right?
But the cool thing about the scanners that we took is not only does it take this 3D data, but it also takes pictures of it, so you can lay the color picture on top of the scan data. So you could like turn it on and off and kind of see the contrast between what's visible to the naked eye and then the difference in where the data lays. So, you know, you might see a difference in height, whereas you can't really see that when all the colors are.
Huh. That's crazy. What other kinds of archaeological artifacts have you guys scanned, or is that, do you guys go on site often, or is that kind of a rare thing, that one of those things that just pops up?
So far it's been pretty far between projects where we're doing something like this. I don't think we've ever sent anybody to the jungle, but you know, we've been to Asia several times, mainly for like power stuff, like power generation and things of that nature. But we're hoping to get more into archaeology. There's a lot of value there, not necessarily for us as a company, but the fact that the elements are washing this information away, you know, from our ancestors and these other groups' ancestors. It's all washing away with time. And the tech that we use and employ like can preserve that.
Was there anything else around the monolith, or is that just the monolith is just smack in the middle of the jungle and that's it?
Just by happenstance, when we were at La Mirada, the place with the school that we brought supplies to, this guy happened to hear that an archaeologist was coming, and he brought a picture of this weird head, like head carving,
crystal skull,
and all of a sudden Daniel gets super excited. He's like, but he's trying not to show it. You know, he's like, oh wow, can we see that tomorrow? Can we scan that? You know, and it's like, and the guy's really hesitant because he's like, what does this guy want to take pictures of this thing for? Like, and. Long story short, because it rained, we couldn't go there and scan it. But that head is a key player in things around it, right? That might be a great way for them to tie the timelines together, because I guess the head is from some group in time, and then the monolith carvings are from some other group in time. But they have common features that they're trying to tie together.
Huh.
In fact, at the studies, we're going to be scanning that for the archaeologists so they can see the tech and kind of get introduced to the 3D world a little bit more.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I would think that'd be the Wild Wild West as far as, you know, as far as like museums, like shouldn't every museum have one of your scanners, or shouldn't you guys have staff at, you know, like the Cincinnati Art Museum and be, you know, scanning sculptures and, I don't know, I mean, paintings, would that make sense at all to see if there's any, I don't know, anything hidden? I don't know.
I think you're onto something. I wish it would, right? We've got the Library of Congress that has every written thing ever, right?
Yeah.
Why would you not do that with computer files of all these items, too?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you got ISIS, less space. Like, destroying, you know, art museums over there in Syria. I mean, man, yeah, if they had scans of that stuff, then it's no big deal. Then we can all just trash everything. No, but yeah, that would...
it's like saving culture. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how far back does the technology go?
How far back? Actually, so one of our suppliers called Hexagon, did it start out as Romer? Yeah. So Romer is one of the brands of Hexagon. And the guy who started the Romer arm, I want to say it was in the 60s. With like first prototyping and stuff, it would take a single point It's on this arm, like your arm, and it's got a probe on the end of it, and you come down and take a point. You pull a trigger, and it takes a point, and then it has the exact position of that point. And then you move the arm to a different place that you're interested in, and you pull the trigger, you take another point, and then you can measure the distance between them, or if you do that several times, you could do like angles, right? So that's how people were measuring tubes, let's say, for a muffler, right? Or you're in exhaust system. You got all those pipes running through. So you could measure different points in that tubing to see if it's being built correctly.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to say in the 60s, that tech is where it started. It was before that, too. You get big gantry styles that take a single point with the same method. But this guy, Romer, or who built Romer, I don't remember his name. Homer Romer.
Homer Romer.
Yeah, he's still around. He's a friend of the company. But, yeah, he was the first guy to make, like, this articulated arm where it moves like your arm. And it's just advanced since then. You know, the scanners nowadays on a Romer take 750,000 points a second. So it's like pulling that trigger I was just talking about to get you 1 point.
Yeah, 750,000. Jeez. So it's instant, too. It's not like you even have to hold your arm up for, like, you know, 10 seconds or anything. It's just like, boom, hit the trigger, and it automatically maps everything in its way.
Yep.
That's crazy. That's unbelievable. So, I mean, and then also, so this is pre-3D printing. So now 3D printing is involved, and, you know, like we were just talking to the guy from the library. You know, you can go down and 3D print something at the library now. It's like, it's so accessible to, like, normal people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's got to be an explosion for you guys, too, right? I mean, you can almost do, like, retail. Like, bring in whatever you want, and you guys scan it. You gotta go down and get a cheese coney, and you guys can come up with a little CAD model, and we could 3D print our food.
Yeah, that's true.
Whatever you want.
There's a great marriage between the two techs. Especially because you don't necessarily have to do too much processing of your scan data to get it ready for a 3D printer. We've dabbled in some 3D printing, but it's not really our forte right now. Yeah, maybe in the future, but yeah, we love working with people that are doing cool stuff like that.
Yeah, but you guys come up with the files that people then take to have 3D printed.
Yep, exactly.
And now I understand you guys are doing stuff with, like, aviation companies and whatnot, and so they can take their parts and they're 3D printing jets these days.
Yep.
I mean, that's crazy. Because, I mean, when I think of something being 3D printed, I think of, like, little, you know, piece of plastic, almost like a toy.
Or foam core or something.
But, yeah. And so, like, what are some of the materials that people can 3D print it with?
Well, I mean, that's a great question.
I mean, is it just plastic, or is it...
No, plastic's definitely the most common and accessible, because if you get into the metal sintering, it gets real expensive for material.
I'd hope so, because I mean, I don't want to be flying on a jet made out of 3D printed materials.
Yeah,
and it not being made out of metal.
So I will tell you this: anything that shoots or flies is under ITAR certification, and everything in those that is certified is insanely well made. It's kind of amazing that anything shoots or flies, because they have to go through so many steps to make it, let's say, legal.
Yeah.
Like, the processes take standards. Forever. Yeah, for sure. But everything's really well made. Like a bolt, right? It has to be a third of a human hair to what it's supposed to be in order for it to get put into a plane.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Do they 3D print the bolts?
No.
I was going to say, they still got to go to Home Depot for something, right? Got to 3D print it from scratch. Yeah. But that would be awesome if they would. Oh, man. It's kind of mind-blowing.
When I see those guys on the highway, because I saw these on your site, you have a laser version of these, where they got the one guy's got the big scope and the other guy's holding the pole. What the hell are they doing?
Yeah, remind me. I'm sorry.
Or is that surveying, or is that...
Is
that something you guys do?
Yeah.
So I thought I saw that a version of that on your site.
So yeah, no, you're exactly right. Yep. So we have some tools that scan really small stuff, right? Like a razor blade or an ant. And then we have other things that probe or scan, like you're talking about, the surveying, seeing what the angle is of a road.
Okay.
Typically, for those applications, we do scanning. So we could scan, like, a bridge or a coliseum or a stadium or a building or something. So instead of, like, taking those points like I was talking about, we would just capture the whole thing with color. Like, we're doing a project with, can I say this? Indianapolis is doing a light mapping, like, projection thing, like Blink.
Uh-huh.
Smaller scale than Blink.
Of course.
Like I say, dirty names.
Shout out to Andrew Salzburn. So we went down and scanned the memorial down there.
The Soldier and Sailors Memorial?
Yeah, exactly, yep.
There you go.
Scanned that in some of the buildings so that they could put their preview of the mapping on the buildings.
Oh, okay.
So we do less of the actual surveying stuff and more data than that.
Okay. So if you wanted to go down and scan, like, the skyline of Cincinnati so we can make a sweet snow globe, you could do that?
Oh, man, that'd be cool. That would take forever, but, yeah, theoretically we could do it.
You could? What's
the range? I mean, you couldn't stand over Newport and just go, approximation? Or
no.
Is it
I'm sure that's coming, but,
okay.
Yeah, no. Our longest range scanners, I think, are 100 meters or so.
That's still pretty good.
Yeah. And then, have you guys ever seen those, what are they called? When you take a panorama picture.
Oh, like a 360 kind of?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like on your phone?
Yeah.
So those things work through a technology or a system called texture mapping. And it finds similar areas and matches them together. That's how it overlays those pictures. The long range, any scanner works that same way, or almost any scanner. If you put similar objects in that are fixed, they don't move, and you scan that spot, and then you move your scanner to another spot, and it picks up those same targets, we call them, then it knows, oh, I moved over here. And so that's how you start, piecing these scans together.
Oh, wow. It knows that that's not right, huh?
Yeah. So you could do downtown if you want by making targets everywhere and just being able to see them in your different setups.
So is there any kind of an application where do you think down the road this would just be like something you could give as a Christmas gift and people could just, scan things and make stuff, on their own? Does it have a private application, I guess?
Hmm.
I mean, I reckon at some point it would. If you're just like a home remodeling, you're doing your own home remodeling.
Well, I did hear about some of the work you guys do at Children's Hospital.
Oh, yeah.
So that might be a private application like you're talking about where, I don't know if you want to talk about that. But understood, like a family has a child who's not expected to live much longer or whatnot, you guys will scan their hands or parts of them that their family can then print out some sort of almost like a memorial or
it's a touching application, preserving some really tender moments for people. It could work like taking pictures. Here's this special
family
moment.
Photo.
In fact, when we do career fairs and stuff, we scan kids' faces and let them geek out about seeing themselves in 3D. And
wow!
Theoretically, you could the house my wife grew up in was just torn down recently, but they could have gone and done a scan of it, and then you would have had that for posterity. And then who knows? You could probably just do a projection of it in our backyard. Just boom, there.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Or do that with anything, because
rebuild the house.
Because we had the home builders in here. They were talking about, a lot of times people are upset that a house has to get torn down, but sometimes it has to get torn down. It's rotting from the inside. It can't be saved.
Mm-hmm.
But at least for posterity's sake, you could save some of these old buildings and be like, well, this is what it looks, as opposed to some old blurry black and white photo that doesn't really show you anything.
Yeah, for sure.
That's really cool. So that goes back to the Library of Congress thing. If not only saving books, but just like artifacts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
So you guys sell the equipment? You sell these scanners?
We do, yep.
Sweet. What's a sweet scanner going to run me if I want to, like, you know, just have one myself for my own personal use?
Yeah, sure. Well, you can find them on eBay, the ones I took to Artec.
Yeah?
I probably should say that.
Yeah, what the heck? That's not going to make you guys any money.
Yeah, we're always willing to negotiate, for sure.
So if I wanted, like, to make, like, the perfect T-shirt, and, you know, you come in and you get scanned and then, you know, have a little sweatshop in the back that could sew the T-shirt to your exact measurements.
Yeah.
Would that work?
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right. We, yeah, for sure. We've scanned real people for applications like games, you know, game development, and Marie Claude was her name, animation. I think, for a video game. Yep, scan them. I don't know if we could do a shirt. That'd be cool, but we could at least get the picture and the texture.
Huh.
You know, so...
Get the body.
So they can get the... So
get the body measurements, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so you can scan them, and then they can send that to Disney or something, and they could animate it with that same file?
Yep.
Our own Ricky was on about that when we did the episode about retro games. He said Mortal Kombat, it was... The technology back then didn't exist, really. So they had to... I think he said they photographed them doing 7 or 8 different moves, and from there they just had to piece them together.
Just drew it out, pixel by pixel.
Yeah, and the computer had to guess the rest of the movement. So they moved the arm from up to down over here. You had the beginning and the end of that, but the computer had to fill in the rest and get that. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's wild. How about that? Yeah, so, I mean, has Ron Jeremy ever called you up and been like, like, come on.
No.
I'm telling you, where does this stop? Like that, my brain goes crazy. You know, you're in Peru scanning monoliths and
What other places have you gone besides archaeological, like crime scenes or anything else exciting?
Oh,
like
there
that?
You go.
So yeah, there is a huge application for crime scenes.
Ooh, do tell.
Like if we think about the long range scanning application, right? Mm-hmm. Probably use a mid range for this, but same concept. Let's say there's a car wreck. Where's our favorite spot to wreck in Cincinnati? Is it the 75-74 exit?
Light tunnel's always good for a wreck.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. You know, so
anywhere about now.
Yes.
all this construction, but there's a wreck. Police show up, crime scene investigators, whomever. They just put down a tripod and they hit a button that says go, and they've got 360 data of that, from which they can go on their computer and look around just like a video game, like an interactive video game. You can go in and move the scene around and look at details.
Ooh.
So yeah, tons of applications there.
Huh? Is that admissible in court? I mean, it's that good, right? I mean, it's.
Well, there's all these crime shows. The one of the things that always kind of mucks things up, especially for like a small town police force, too. This happens, but even big city, is someone will go in and they'll screw up the. You know, as soon as someone steps in there, you're contaminating the crime scene.
Yeah.
So if the first thing you do is show up with the laser thing and boom, take the picture.
Yeah.
Then you can monkey around and pick up things and put them in bags and stuff like that. But yeah, having that first initial scan, I think would be very handy.
Yeah, I completely agree. Because here's the difference, right? If I take a picture, let's say I took a picture of you two guys right here, right? That's a 2D image. I don't know what's on your backs, right? I don't know what kind of shoes you're wearing.
There you go.
But if you go to go to a scanner, you can find all that detail. You just zoom around and look wherever you want.
Huh. And I guess, and you can do the same thing outside, even in the dark, find if there were footprints or...
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Oh, footprints.
Yeah.
Would that show up? Like, sure. It's a little bit...
Yep.
See on your website here, like the little part on a Lego, you can tell if they're knockoff Legos or not. I don't know. Is that just a? I'm just looking at a banner. Maybe that's not.
Yeah, I know.
Let's see. So you can rent equipment. So we could rent one and just go around the city scanning random
just
stuff.
Try it out. Yeah, sure. For sure.
That sounds like a field trip waiting to happen for us.
Yeah.
That would be unbelievable.
Oh man, we'd love to have you guys up, give you a tour, show you things. So yeah.
I bet this is a huge room that, I don't know, is there like a big wait? Like, you guys just have a month-long wait, you're scanning everything, or you guys are sitting around twiddling your thumbs until something else shows up?
Well, we are definitely exploding right now. We're always looking for good talent, people that are fired up and want to be part of a community that does some cool things. But it depends on what you're trying to get done, you know, what the weight is.
Yeah.
We try not to keep it long, for sure. But any, you know, anybody's welcome to pop up, and if somebody's available, we'll show you around.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad you guys could come and talk about it today.
So, yeah. So people can either get the equipment themselves and use it, or like you going to Peru, you guys can be hired to run the equipment too.
Yep, that's right.
Cool. Any sports applications to it? I see you're wearing a street hockey hat.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to the Bubs with CSHL.
Sweet.
I imagine that would, the sports is a, would have a big interest in that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Measuring guys' swings and stuff, or like when a quarterback loses his throw, like our own Andy Dalton maybe.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well played. Last night was rough.
Yeah, his ego might need to be
scanned and preserved. See,
oh, man. Yeah, that would be cool with the swings and the...
You always hear about guys, and pitchers, too. They always say, you know, they can't solve something, they can't throw strikes. And then, you know, good.
It's more of a static application. If things are moving, not the best yet.
Okay.
So things that are still. So like Johnny Bench's hands, he had huge hands, right?
Yeah.
So it scanned his hands, just to look at
him. Johnny Bench came in and said, "Scan my hands."
It was for the statue.
It was for the statue. Yeah.
That's awesome. Can you email me that file? I want to go 3D print his. His hands.
Sell those in store.
Out of gold. Yeah. Wouldn't that be hilarious if we start selling Johnny Bench hands? ashtrays. Like then they
used to. Yeah, you could say you could hold a coaster, hold a cup.
That's an awesome idea. I love it.
Hold my six balls. No.
Yeah. Friend of the show.
Oh, cool.
Seven balls, however many you held. That's crazy. Man, yeah. I mean, you guys could just stay busy measuring stuff here in Cincinnati, I would think.
Mm.
That would be wild. So we could go get our 3D file, take it down to the makerspace to our friend from the library.
Oh yeah,
cool spot.
And then just start 3D printing our faces off.
It's true.
Like, literally.
For sure.
I love it. Did you guys scan a mummy from the art museum? Or is that somebody else?
No, I don't think we did.
When you guys,
I'm not familiar with that project. Yeah.
Okay, I was thinking one of those. Maybe they just took it to like Children's Hospital or something and had it like X-rayed. But anyway, I'm just trying to think of.
We've done some silly stuff like
the ball competition.
Balls,
you got to talk about it.
Yeah, like
ball competition.
Ball competition. Some porn site did a competition where guys would submit.
Okay, so balls.
Pictures of their balls.
Okay.
Another song, the Johnny Bench kind.
Yeah.
And I don't even know his name, but the guy who got second place happened to be up in Cleveland, and so this company sent him down to us to have us scan his balls. So of course we got somebody
now,
to go
it,
through.
Is it hard to operate the equipment with one hand over your eye?
Yeah,
blindfolded.
Okay. And how do you? He got second. Like how do they judge? Like size or how beautiful?
What's the criteria here?
How do you judge balls? That's what I need to Google that.
No, don't.
Your cookies might be in trouble.
The first place guy didn't want his scanned, huh?
I don't know where he was from or anything. Man. I think they took them and then put them on the end of dildos or something. I have no idea. Yeah,
it makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, where else would they go? I'm telling you, there's a whole world there you guys are missing out on. So whenever the economy goes bad and, you know, ISIS destroys all the art in the world, then you can... You can exploit the porn industry, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's good. You got a backup plan.
And Library of Congress will just have everybody's balls on.
Yeah, exactly.
So as far as the measuring and scanning thing overall, how Is this like the norm now, or is this still kind of an exotic technology that you would use, or is this the way thing just the way things are done now?
Depends on the industry.
Okay.
You know, I think part of the reason that we haven't done more projects like going down to Peru is that they may be unaware of some of the things that are possible, right? And so part of my job at, with EMI is teaching people capabilities and then also how to do these things.
So what industries have really embraced it?
Well, a lot of aero, a lot of auto. We do a lot of stuff with the agricultural. We're doing more and more with oil and gas, and we've done a lot with nuclear power.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Did I go to Chernobyl and...
well, yeah, hopefully not that.
Man.
So, like a nuke site, for instance, they may be bringing in some huge piece of equipment the size of this building, right? And... but they've got piping and other tools in the way and machines, right? So we'd go in, scan the site, and that way they have this computer file where they know where everything is, and then they can move the things and see where what needs to move and how, so they can bring in this new capital equipment.
Wow.
That actually happens a lot more than you would think with, like, huge warehouse companies.
So they order this stuff, and they're like, oh, how are we going to move this thing in?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been down that road a couple times before. Oh, but yeah. I never thought of hiring a 3D scanning company.
We got, we got the new printers in your
system. To make it happen.
Yeah. Just scan the space because they that all ran into all kinds of problems. What was the... They couldn't get the cooling thing sorted? That took like a week?
When
we brought the new printers in?
Oh, yeah. They had to like take them apart and I don't know. We didn't measure the door. Or they didn't tell us how big the equipment actually was to get in our warehouse space.
Yeah.
So so that just involved just taking a couple screws off and, you know, removing a fan. There was no nuclear powered anything or
same concept though, right?
It could have been solved easily.
Take it down the garage
measure
door.
Measure the printer, measure the door, measure the room, sorted.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's awesome. Well, maybe we'll have to 3D scan our store or something, put like a little virtual reality. Or man, I want to take my family up there and then 3D print them in like that'd ceramic, and then you can like paint them just like a Color Me Mine. You know,
yeah, yeah.
I'm telling you,
that'd be great for folks out of town. Haven't ever been to the actual store.
Yep.
You can just 3D scan the store. Like here's the Loveland store. And you look around. And
yep. Put on your virtual reality.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Then and click on it and then buy it right there, just like you're shopping.
All right,
well, we got stuff to work on.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, I mean, we could scan it, just turn it into a fly-through movie, you know, and then you throw it up on a TV and let people geek out at seeing your other stores.
Yeah. That would be crazy.
We were talking about the construction thing. I was reminded that... In how they did it in the old days, and sometimes it didn't turn out well. When we used to drive between my grandparents' house in Youngstown and down to Pittsburgh, we'd go on this one route. My dad would always point out this off-ramp on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. He goes, if you look and see, you can see that it's off. It's not a perfect semicircle. It's clearly off. And you go by, and I'm like, yeah, I did notice it. How did you notice that? He goes, I worked on that one summer, and they measured it all out, and they had everything poured, and then they looked at it again, and they're like, this is off, and the guy's just like, ah, just leave it, who cares? So
that's crazy. Yeah. And now you're on to the exact. That doesn't happen much these days, huh?
Well, I was going to say, that would probably prevent that kind of thing from
I think you're right, yeah. Well, we do our best.
That's awesome. Well, I'll tell you what. We at the end of every episode, we like to allow our guests to think of a word or phrase that we use as a promo code on our website.
Oh, wow.
It's all the rage. Yeah, it's a really cool thing that everybody really loves. Yeah, so whatever word you say can be used for 20% off on our stores and on our website. It'll be good once this episode comes out to the following Wednesday when the next episode comes out. So cool. What would you like your word to be?
Can I kind of combine two words?
Sure.
Yeah, do whatever you want.
So I'm really grateful that you guys have had me on to represent EMI and So I'd like to combine that and exactly grateful.
Exactly grateful.
Okay, that's a good one.
There you go.
Yeah, all
right. Awesome.
Sweet. Yeah.
Well, yeah, happy scanning, guys. Thanks for coming in and sharing a little about what you guys do.
Yeah, really appreciate
it. It's like a Mr. Rogers episode here, you know, when he kind of, or was it? Was that Mr. Rogers? He would go and
do
little field trips?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, we could just blab forever, but you guys get it. Yeah, so check out exactmetrology.com. You can see some of these scanners. You can rent one. Don't do anything creepy with them.
Some kind of an artiste, though.
You can buy them if you want to do something creepy. get your file, take it down to the library, get it printed out. You guys are on Instagram?
Yep.
What's your handle on there?
Exactmetrology.
Exactmetrology. So check them out. You can see the monolith they did in Peru and some other cool stuff. So yeah, thanks for coming in, guys.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Jason and Matt from Exact Metrology. But I guess you didn't know those things could be measured with lasers now, did you? Now you're all going to want to do it, aren't you? Yeah, we know. All right, so if there's someone you'd like to hear on the podcast, please drop us an email, podcast@cincyshirts.com. Put podcast guest in the subject line, and then we'll try to track down that person. We're going to give us a little brief bio that might be helpful as well. And if you have their contact info, why include that as well? Be sure to tell friends and loved ones about the show, including folks who may no longer live in the area but still feel connected to the tri-state. And as always, if you haven't already, go back and plunder the Cincy Shirts archives, Cincy Shirts podcast archives, all kinds of great episodes back there. I guarantee you'll find a bunch that you will like. Today's show is produced by me with help from Josh and Darren. Our theme music is Cincinnati by Big Nothing, who are from Philadelphia, and you can find all of their music on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you get your music. And let me see, find vintage tees from great places like Boston, Phoenix, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Louisville, Seattle, Philadelphia, and more at oldschoolshirts.com. Lots of defunct teams, loads of old shopping centers, restaurants, radio stations, that sort of affair, like Cincy Shirts, but for those towns. And again, the promo code for this episode is Exactly Grateful. Exactly Grateful. Type that in or say it in one of our stores. When you type it in, all lowercase, uppercase, lowercase, doesn't matter. You can use that to save 20% off your entire CincyShirts.com or OldSchoolShirts.com order. And like I said, you can use that in our brick-and-mortar stores on Over the Rhine, Hyde Park, and Lublin. Follow our social channels, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat for the latest Cincy Shirts news. Give us a good review wherever you get the show from. And as always, download or stream us next time. Bye! Cincinnati!